My husband is our hero for this because in the time that my body was pushing out this baby, I wasn't thinking. Like, there's nothing going through my head at all. My husband had rolled up the windows, cranked the heat in the car, grabbed our jackets to keep the baby warm, and dialed 911.
Hi, I'm Amy Kiefer, a nurse, doula, and personal trainer.
And I'm Crystal Howald, a women's health and orthopedic physical therapist.
We're the co-founders of Expecting and Empowered, and we just so happen to be sisters. We built this business because we saw a huge gap between the information that women were given during pregnancy and postpartum and the information that they need. We're committed to helping close the gap so that women are better equipped to navigate these demanding and challenging years.
Yes, we're both moms of three, so we know firsthand how many changes women go through physically, mentally, and emotionally because women aren't getting enough information to make informed decisions about their own health. It leaves mothers picking up the pieces afterwards. We need that to change.
With our professional backgrounds, we're going to pull the curtain back on this season and give you the information you need to thrive.
We're on a mission to change women's health. Let's do this.
We asked our community who they wanted on the podcast when it came to birth stories. And a lot of women told us, you need to have Kaylee on. So today, I'm so excited to be talking to Kaylee. She's a mom of two and is the owner of Heritage Baby Designs, which is a company she created to design baby-wearing ring slings for the everyday mom. She has a pretty wild birth story about her second child that just might involve giving birth in a car. But first, Kaylee, please tell us more about who you are and what you're passionate about.
So, as you said, I'm Kaylee. I own Heritage Baby Designs. Started out as just ring slings, but now I also make stretch wrap carriers. My passion with baby wearing, I think it started before I even had kids. I knew that, you know, I would see pictures all over the place of women wearing their kids. And I thought that just looks so logical. Like,
yeah.
Hold this child constantly because they can't move on their own, but you still have stuff to do. Like, I have dishes to clean and dogs to walk. So how can I do that without having a thing? And then you go to the mall and there's big strollers. And I was like, there's gotta be a better way. And so from there, I kind of just fell in love with baby wearing, fell pregnant and had purchased four carriers before I even ended my second trimester. I was like, I was in it.
Yeah.
And put my son in his first wrap when he was 8 hours old. And I've been hooked ever since. Like, no turning back. And just getting to be part of that journey for so many is super, I don't know, it's just like such an honor that these women trust me and my ability to make them a carrier. They can then, you know, use as a tool for successful chest feeding or successful bonding with a child, whether that be their biological child or an adopted child. You know, it just means so much to me. And I have so many messages every day of people saying, you know, I've fallen back in love with my ring sling, or because of you, I feel empowered to try this and make sure, you know, like get it to work, or my toddler needed me and I was able to put my baby on me and give them the attention that they needed, because that's what it's really about. It's about creating that community. And it's so easy to fall into that sense of despair when you have a new little baby and you're on your own. And so I think it's so great that some of us can find a way to climb out of that with the help of baby wearing.
I love your passion behind it, your why behind it. I'm sure you get the sweetest photos because those babies, or even when they're bigger, when they're tucked on you, like just such a special feeling, you know, they get to be toddlers and they're not so down to cuddle. So soaking in that time when they just want you and want to be on you is so, so special. Now, like we said, when we asked who people wanted to hear from when it came to birth stories, I can't tell you how many times you were tagged. So we are excited. I'm going to give you the floor and we want to hear the story of your second birth.
Right. So the end of it is that both of us were fine. So yes. I don't want anyone to listen with any anxiety. So I was my second child. My kids are 2 years and 2 months apart. So my pregnancies were fairly close together. My first child was a 25-hour labor. My water broke at midnight, and then he was born 25 hours later. I slowly came into contractions, and he was sunny side up. So he was face up. I took an epidural at 13 hours into labor. I threw up. It's like the whole thing, you know. I was told potentially go into C-section because you're pushing a long time and we just can't get this baby out because he feels like he's in the wrong position. He was a forceps delivery. And at the end of that, my midwife, you know, at discharge said, if you get pregnant quickly again, we trust that your body will know what to do, because your body knew what to do this time. The baby just was in a poor position. And by the time it came to pushing, you were 22 hours in, you were tired. And so when it came to my second, they kept saying in all my midwife appointments, it's going to be efficient, Kaylee. We really think that this labor is going to be efficient. And my husband used to joke, we should name you efficient. That's what they kept saying to me. And so, you know, fast forward to, so my son was born at 38 weeks. My daughter was born at 40+3. And so I got to 38 weeks and I was like, okay, here we go. Any day now, and nothing. I was experiencing prodromal labor, which I had with my son as well. And so for anyone who doesn't know what that is, it's not quite false labor. It's kind of preparatory labor. It sucks. I'm sorry for anybody who experiences it. With my son, it was 2 weeks. With my daughter, it's about the same, but it started obviously later in the pregnancy. And so night after night, I was experiencing these timable contractions, and then nothing would happen. I'd wake up in the morning, be tired and sore, but there were no more contractions. And so I just, honestly, I just ignored it all at some point and just thought, if it's real, I'll know. And if it's not, I'll just keep on trucking. So we get to my 40-week appointment. I have my toddler with me, and he's 2 at the time. I had had a second sweep that wasn't actually too uncomfortable, but by the time I got home, I had a little bit of spotting, like a very little bit. I didn't experience a bloody show or anything like I had with my son. I had lost my mucus plug. My sweeps were 2 weeks apart. And so I think my mucus plug came out in between the 2 sweeps. And so, you know, we knew things were potentially going to get going. So I was feeling some cramping after my sweep, and I got home and I thought, well, what are we going to do? It's dead of winter. I don't want to be outside. I'm also 40 weeks pregnant. I don't really feel like it. And so I think I just lived through the cramps for the next few days. So then 40+3 comes, and I wake up in the morning and I'm feeling a little bit antsy. I don't really know how to describe the feeling. And for anyone who's listening, who's been in early labor, probably knows this feeling. It's just this weird, I don't know, ants in my pants sensation. And so with my son, I had our local florist. I live in a small town, and our local florist said, when I was young and in midwife care, we would tell women to get on their hands and knees and clean their kitchen floor. She said, the worst case scenario is that you won't get a baby, but you'll have a clean kitchen floor. And I thought, that's, you know, you're not wrong. I have 2 big dogs. And I was like, what's the harm? You know? And so I had done it with my son. And sure enough, my water broke the night after, you know, I had cleaned the floor. So the second time around, I thought, you know what, let me set up my toddler with a show and a snack, and I'm going to clean the kitchen floor. And so I did. I got down on my hands and knees and I cleaned the kitchen floor and started to feel some cramping. And I thought, this, I'm just really uncomfortable down here. Let me mop the house instead. I grabbed the vacuumed up some dog hair and then started mopping the floor, and I couldn't reach the end of the house, and I don't have a large home, but I couldn't even get the main floor done. And I was like, these are kind of a lot of cramps, you know, this is pretty intense. My son woke up from his nap and I was very uncomfortable. And I said, you know what, buddy, mom really has to get in the bath. And I don't know why, I've never been interested in a water birth, but something about getting in the bath, I thought, if this is prodromal and I get in the bath and I relax, they'll stop. Well, I got to the washroom, started the water, brought some Play-Doh and toys and snacks into the washroom for my son, sat on the toilet, and then almost got stuck on the toilet because the second I sat down, I had like a couple of really strong contractions. And so the water's filling up in the tub. I was like, oh, I need to stop the water. What's happening? So I finally got myself up off the toilet, turned off the water, and got myself into the tub. And the second I got in the tub, actually, things picked up. I thought, oh, wow, this is interesting. So I'm texting my husband, who's at work about a half hour north of us, texting my mom, who's about an hour south of me, and texting my mother-in-law, who's about a half hour south. And so these are kind of all the players in this story. And then, of course, my midwife. And so I'm texting all of them saying, you know, I don't know, it kind of feels real, but I don't, we'll see. And then I thought, let me at least time a couple of these and see what happens. So I time them. There's not really any pattern to them. I call my husband and he says, well, you sound a little winded. And I said, well, yeah, I am in pain. This isn't fun for me, but I don't know that a baby's coming. Keep in mind, my first was 25 hours long. So at this point, I'm maybe half hour in. I'm like, I got time. Efficient from 25 hours is 6 hours. Like, I'm not in a hurry. So,
well, yeah. And you're 40 and three on this day, right?
Yeah.
But also you had had a lot of prodromal labor, which I, with my third, I did. And it's like, for those that haven't had it, it's like, you literally almost feel like you're never actually going to go into labor because you've had so many contractions to that point, and they've always petered out to the point where I was to my husband, I was like, I don't even know if I'm going to know when I'm actually in labor because this has felt real to me
the whole time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And my prodromal labor, they were timable and
yeah,
sometimes for
same.
Hours, you know, I could time them and they were regular patterns. And that's why, especially when I was in the tub, there was no pattern to them. And so I thought, well, this can't be labor because this doesn't make any sense. So I'm breathing through all my contractions and trying to relax, trying not to put too much pressure on the wrong spots in my body. And I'm all alone. It's just me and a 2-year-old at home. And so I called my mother-in-law and I said, listen, these are kind of getting close together. And I think, you know, even if I don't have a baby, it might just be best if you take the toddler home with you, please. Maybe for the night, maybe not. His bag is already packed. It's been packed and ready. And she said, oh my gosh, yes, don't worry. Well, in that half hour from when I hung up the phone to when she showed up, things took off. I don't know if it was mind and body just connecting. It was like, well, she's getting rid of the toddler. Let's go, guys. It's time to party. So she got here, took my son. My husband, I think, came in just as his mom was leaving. And he said, okay, you got to get out of the tub. So he grabbed me some clothes. He grabbed our bags, packed the car, and came back to the tub. And the tub water at this point is cold. You know, I'm not comfortable. It's not feeling good. And I said, okay, but I couldn't get out of the tub. So he looked at my timer and they were, I think at this point, 1.5 to 2 minutes apart. And he just looked at my phone, looked at me and said, get out. I said, yeah, it's probably a good idea. So he helped me get out of the tub in the short window I had between these contractions, got me dressed. And between the bathroom and the front doors is maybe 50 paces. I had to stop 3 or 4 times because I was so slow. So I kept getting another contraction. I ended up on the floor with him stepping on my, so I was like on the floor in the fetal position with him stepping on my hip to create that pressure. And I kept saying, push harder. He said, I'm going to crush your hip bones. I said, trust me, you're not. Just step harder. And at one point I looked up at him and I said, I don't think we're going to make it. And he said, excuse me. And then I paused and I looked at him. I said, no, forget it. We're going to do it. We got to get to the hospital. So we get in the car. I call my mom and I say, I know you're already on your way, but just go straight to the hospital. The hospital is about a half hour from us. But again, I'm thinking we have time. I'm like, maybe I'm 5-6 centimeters, you know? Spoiler alert, when I was on the floor, I was in transition. Like it was already happening. So I get in the car, call my mom, call the midwife and say, we're heading to the hospital. This is really intense. And she said, okay, I'm getting in the car. I'm on my way. We are driving through. So I live in a suburb, but we are basically rural. So we're passing by farms. There's no lights on the road. It's winter. All the windows are down. I live in Ontario, Canada, in January. All the windows in the car are down because I am boiling. I need fresh air. I can't. My head is dangling out the window. And my husband said I sounded like a cow. It's not a loud cow, but
I'm a quiet cow.
Just like the noises coming out of me because I was just trying to breathe through the contractions and the bumps in the road were awful. The feeling was awful. And so we get to this bridge over a major highway. And I said, oh no. I just said, oh no. And he said, oh no, what? I said, you need to pull over. Country road, no lights, It's 5 p.m., 5:30 p.m. in January. So it's pitch black outside. And he's like, well, I can't just pull over here. And I was like, I'm like, I'm gonna be patient with him. I'm taking deep breath. And I turned to him and I said, you need to pull over. And he goes, give me a second. So he pulled into a gas station. It is the smallest little gas station. I think it had three, it has three pumps. It's still there. I think it has three pumps and a little hut for the gas station attendant, but it is flooded with lights. And so he pulled into this gas station, tucked the car into a corner. And I, by the time he got the car in park, I was pulling my pants down. And I don't know what made me take my pants down. I knew I could feel something coming, but I thought maybe it was my water bulging or I don't know. At this point, my water still had not broken. So I'm like, could be just my water's bulging. I'd felt my water break before. So I knew that feeling of pressure. And so I took my pants down, maybe just to see what was happening. And a baby came out. Like, I don't know what to say. I think like, I pulled my pants down. I'm in the front seat of the car and kind of just leaning back because there's a car seat in the passenger seat behind me. So I can't like recline my seat or anything, but I'm just leaning back as much as I can. And I reached down and looked down and my body was pushing out this baby. I did not actively ask for it to happen. I didn't will it. It just like a head was in my hand all of a sudden. And then I was like, well, you know, what do we do? And then the baby came out. And by the time the baby was in my arms, so in the time, my husband is our hero for this, because in the time that my body was pushing out this baby, I wasn't thinking. Like, there's nothing going through my head at all. My husband had rolled up the windows, cranked the heat in the car, grabbed our jackets to keep the baby warm, and dialed 911. I was like, how did you do all that in 30 seconds? And he's like, I don't know. Common sense. I was like, a baby's about to be in my car. It's minus 20 degrees Celsius outside. The baby needs to be warm. So baby came out. We wrapped baby in my winter jacket and a couple of sweaters. My husband had thrown a hoodie under me, which didn't save his car from any mess, guys. A hoodie.
To be clear.
Yeah. A hoodie's not helping you. So then I'm holding this baby. And just as I get her like up to my chest, all I hear is, hi, this is so-and-so at 911 dispatch. What's your emergency? And I was like, oh, there's someone on the phone. And my husband goes, my wife just had a baby. We're in the car. He reads out, you know, exactly where we are. She goes, okay. Is everyone okay? Like, is baby okay? I said, yes. The cord had been around her neck, which is common. Nobody panic. You know, she wasn't blue or anything, but the cord was there. So I made sure to take that off. But we had no suction for her. So, you know, she was congested, but she was crying. So everything was okay. And she was warm. And as we're talking, I, you know, pulled my shirt up and got her straight onto my chest so that she had my body heat. And we just read out to dispatch where we were. They sent out two trucks because technically we were two patients. I needed one and the baby needed one. And my mom actually drove past us. So my mom on the way to the hospital drove past and saw the ambulance at the gas station.
She's like, oh, I wonder what's going on over there.
She knew. So my husband had managed to text her before she had driven by. So she knew it was us, but she was tempted to pull into the gas station. She was like, well, I'm glad I didn't. So yeah, I don't know. I first called out that it was a boy. So we didn't know what the gender of the baby was. And so I called out, it's a boy, because if anyone has seen newborn genitalia, I was like, yeah, hello, do you not know what that is? And I thought, wait, maybe I saw that wrong, and pulled down the jacket again. I was like, no, it's a girl. My husband broke out into tears. And my midwife at this point was on my phone on speakerphone with dispatch also on the phone. So they're all congratulating us, making sure that we were okay. And my midwife said, you know, the best you can, do not deliver your afterbirth, because it's going to be messy and you're going to be uncomfortable. Like, if you can, she's like, I don't know how to tell you to do this, but if you can hold that back, hold it in, wait. At the very least, if you need to push it out in the ambulance, that's a better place to do it than in your car. So I was like, oh yeah, that's logical. And so ambulance showed up. The ambulance, the EMT is the one that cut the cord for us, made sure we were okay. They let us go in one ambulance instead of separating us. There was a whole discussion about whether they should separate us or not. We got into the car. I delivered the afterbirth in the ambulance and my husband followed behind. We were only 8 minutes away from the hospital. And I don't know, we got to the hospital. I needed a bunch of stitches because she came out so fast. She was the exact same size as my son. Both my kids were born at just about 8 pounds, but I needed a lot of stitches, but she was perfectly healthy. I think the worst part was just, she was very congested. They tried to do some suction by the time we got to the hospital or in the ambulance and at the hospital. It was too late. And so she was just very congested for a couple of days, but honestly, we were happy, healthy. Everything was fine. My midwife was so sad that she missed the delivery, but she's like, I knew it was going to be a fun one. I knew it was efficient and fast and your body would know what to do, but I missed the whole thing. I'm sorry. I mean, I feel like I miss the whole thing sometimes. And that was it. That was, you know, her delivery. They offered us if we wanted to go home that night. And I said, honestly, I just got here. So no. And there were a bunch of complications because with her paperwork, because she wasn't born in the presence of any medical staff. So we had to go through a couple of different phone calls and things to get her actually her birth registered. But that was it. And she was born. And I tell you, she's still stubborn to this day. So.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So when you look back at that, and obviously you just gave us like the play by play.
Yeah.
Is there a point where you're like, oh, I would have left earlier or anything like that? Or are you like, honestly, it was like, it wasn't regular until it was, and it was just, she came super fast. Like that was her entrance. And yeah. There wasn't much that you could do.
No, if anything, what I say to people is I wish I would have stayed home. So having a home birth was on our kind of list of options with our first, but I had a floating placenta. It was all over the place. And I had a few different complications with my first pregnancy. And so pretty early on when the first couple of signs showed up, I thought, you know what, I have fibroids and there was a huge concern with me bleeding. Also, I feel comfortable being in the hospital because the chances of needing a transfer are just too high for my comfort. And so we decided to go to the hospital with my first. But with the second, everything was fine. It was the easiest, breeziest pregnancy of my two. And so having the baby at home was high on our option list. And the reason we decided not to is because we go to a little community hospital. It is so lovely. The nursing staff are so friendly. If anyone's ever delivered in a community hospital, it's almost like going to a 5-star hotel. It's so lovely. I thought, I don't have to be at home with my own mess. I don't have to deal with the dogs. You know, I have someone feeding me. Let's go to the hospital. It was nice. I could have done it at home. I should have done it at home. That's the only thing I ever say. I should have just stayed home.
So then it doesn't sound like it, but I don't want to make assumptions. Did you have any like trauma from the birth as far as like mentally?
Nothing. The only thing is the next baby will be born at home. That is something where like barring any complications, there is nothing that's going to convince me not to have my baby in the comfort of my own home, especially with, so the midwife finally did the math and she looked at the first time I called her to when the baby was born and it was 45 minutes. So she asked me, what do you think your labor was? And I said, I looked at the time, I said, well, she was born at 6:00. Actually, we had to go by the phone call to 911 to determine what time she was born. So 6:08 is what we guesstimated her birth time to be. And an hour and a half before, that's when I got in the tub. So I timed it from getting in the tub to her born. And I said, but I mean, I was feeling cramping before that. So maybe, I said, 2 hours was probably. And my midwife looked at me and she said, no. She said, actively in labor, 45 minutes. She said, because when you called me, this is what you told me. And this is what the numbers were. She was like, it was 45 minutes. And so I said, okay. So, I mean, I think that means that the chances of me having another precipitous labor are high. And I just don't want a chance an en route baby again, or it's just not, I mean, I know I can do it now. And I've always felt comfortable with the idea of a home birth. So there's nothing for me to, there are no hurdles for me to get over in that respect.
Oh my gosh. And then I mean, I have so many follow-ups. One that I want to hear is, so you took your pants down and then you literally could see her head.
I couldn't see it, but I could feel it. Cause I could take my pants down and put my hand down there immediately. I don't know why. Something made me put
because this is all just kind of natural if you think about it. Like you, a bunch of the stuff you said, I'm like, your body was making your decisions for you.
Yeah, it was all instinct to the point where she came out. I kept her upside down for a minute before flipping her. And the midwife said that likely stopped the cord from tightening around her neck because I took the cord off before flipping her up onto my chest. I was like, how did you know how to do that? How did you know how to do that? Because that's something we do. I was like, I don't know. I just did it. I don't know what to tell you.
And then obviously you have such a beautiful and interesting birth story. One thing when you were telling your story that stuck out to me is, okay, so your son was born at 38 weeks mm-hmm. and your daughter was born 40 and 3. Mm-hmm. Your son's birth was, 24 hours mm-hmm. and your daughter's was 45 minutes. I mean, we can argue 2 hours yeah. if we want to,
yeah.
but it's like the difference in those, I think it's probably more extreme than most women experience, yeah. but at the same time, I think it just goes to show your first journey and your second journey might look a lot different. Yeah. And we can't say because this, then next this. But I also think for moms, that gets hard. My third son, mm-hmm. my second son came out so quickly and wonderfully. And then my third, it actually, his birth was, I think, the longest of the three. Mm-hmm. And so having those different experiences can be hard on the mom. I was wondering for you, when you started, obviously you went way past 38 weeks, you had a lot of prodromal labor. Like, was that a hard period for you?
Yeah. So I think what was the toughest was I was so uncomfortable. I was so very uncomfortable. She was born January 8th. So Christmas, I spent basically just laying down. I was done. I half expected her to be born around Christmas time. And so when Christmas Day came around and there was still no baby, man, I was at my wit's end. And so the hardest part for me was just trusting that this baby would come. I'm not going to be pregnant forever. It feels like I'm going to be pregnant forever, but that's not reality. And a lot of just leaning on my network to remind me that I wasn't going to be pregnant forever. Because when you're on those last days, you're not sleeping well. You're never comfortable. And I don't want to be a negative person. It's just, you're never comfortable. You're not. Your body doesn't feel like it's your own. You can't sleep. You're sweating. You smell different. Your milk might be starting to come in, especially when you get to 40 weeks. Things are happening in your body. You're not using the washroom the way you used to. You either poo too much or not enough. You're peeing all the time. There's so many things that are so uncomfortable. And there's no respite from that. And you're only thing your mind tells you is if this baby would just come out, I'd feel better. And so that was the hardest part was that, I went from being super uncomfortable at 35 weeks and then was still pregnant for a month. So that was hard, but I wasn't working. So that was great. So it's not like I had to go to work. And some people say it serves as a great distraction for them. But for me, I could just sleep when I could. My son was still going to daycare for most of the days. So I could just be inside and lay down, find any kind of solace.
And then I'm wondering if you could finish with just one note of encouragement to anyone that is getting really close to the day that they will meet their baby.
I think if you're really close and you haven't done any prep work as far as your home. I actually think that the least important part of prepping for a baby is your physical space. A baby needs so little to thrive in those first few days. They need a food source, warmth, somewhere to sleep. Yeah, it's kind of the list. Some diapers are probably pretty key, but that's it. I think that the biggest prep work that you can do is for yourself mentally to make your life easy. Easy, I say in quotation marks, because, having meals either food train or having things in the freezer or some kind of arrangement so that you're not worried about how you're going to eat because you need that. Knowing what your plan, I say plan, what you would like to see your postpartum look like. So do you want to be active and, out and about, or do you want to be in bed the whole time? Do you want to see people or do you not want to see people? and really setting that up for yourself before it's too late, like before the baby has showed up and then you're ad hocing the whole experience. You can't plan for anything, you know, but if you know what your preferences are, regardless of what situation you end up in, you can stick to those unless you change your mind, but you can stick to those. And then if you're not really, really close, do the things that you read all the time, eat the dates and drink the tea. And the worst thing that's going to happen is that you have to eat dates and you don't like them, but they're not going to harm you. You know, it's not that detrimental. And I am a huge fan of having a birth plan. I know this is a big topic lately in the birth circles, people saying, you know, you can't plan for labor. And I think I'm a great example of that. But with my first, almost every potential intervention was offered to me. But because I had a list, when I actually titled it list of preferences that I handed to my midwife, what it does, it takes away the need for staff to ask the birthing person any questions. Because the last thing you need is an interrogation when you've been awake for 20 hours and pushing for two. It's not the time to ask her questions. Yeah. So having a list that you've written down, that you've thought about when you're clear in your mind and that your partner is on board with, everybody can be on the same page and nobody has to ask you any questions other than, do you want to sign this paper for yes to the epidural? Are you going to sign this paper to say that you accept you're going into surgery, you know? And then with my daughter, you know, I had the exact same list of preferences, and don't discount anything that could steer you off course. So even though I had this precipitous labor, I had a list of preferences for should I have to go into surgery or should she have to be induced, so that everybody knew. It's just expected. So those are my top tips. Just prepare yourself. My grandmother always used to say, hope for the best and plan for the worst. And I think that's the best thing you can do when you're going into having a baby, from labor to postpartum.
Kaylee, when you were telling your story and you were talking about like mopping your floors and being on your hands and knees, I was just picturing every woman listening that's like 40 weeks pregnant, like on the ground. Like, yeah, come on.
For anyone that is in the know, there's something called spinning babies. And in spinning babies, one of the big things they say is to get down on your hands and knees and do rotations. And so I think the hand cleaning is just that, right? It's just spinning babies, except like my florist said, the worst that's going to happen is you have a clean kitchen floor, and that's not all bad.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Tell everyone where they can find you, connect with you, find your ring slings, everything.
Yes. So everywhere I am Heritage Baby Designs. My website's heritagebaby.ca. I'm on TikTok and Instagram. That's it.
I know there's so many places to be. Well, yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much, Kaylee, for sharing your birth story with us. If you guys enjoyed this episode, please tag both of us at Expecting and Empowered and at Heritage Baby Designs.